I was going through the academy, I kind of understood that because a lot of people had said explicitly they're there for free education. But then once I started kind of adjusting my thinking a little bit and asking myself, well, why does somebody need to join the military, which may or may not go against their morals, in order to have this sort of thing? And I think that's a big point of contention for people is, well, should education be free? Should it not be free? But the fact of the matter is that education is very much not free. Healthcare, very much not free. Who should be paying for this? You can throw up into the air and debate until, we all die of old age or something like that. But whether people should have access to that, I don't think is debatable. People should have education, people should have healthcare. And the fact that the military is one of the only ways that people are able to get this in a very consistent fashion is, in my opinion, is not how we start building a peaceful world. And the military is going through recruiting crises, so they're applying all sorts of methods to try and get people to join up. Recruiters, it's a running joke in the military that recruiters are some of the biggest liars you will ever come across. And the fact that recruiters can just straight out lie to get people to join up was absolutely shocking to me, as a bright, starry-eyed 17-year-old entering the academy for the first time. And so it's just kind of realizing, like, on a very basic level, that a lot of people are joining for their livelihoods. At first, when I joined, that was a crazy idea. But then when I realized that it was true, that's kind of what started me down this road of like, well, how can we say that our, and a lot of people in the circles I'm in now, they call it the economic draft. And, asking myself, how can we call ourselves a volunteer force if half the people are there because they simply cannot survive otherwise? At the very least, there's a lot of people who are upset about my education. Why do we pay for her education if she's not even going to go serve? Well, first of all, I'm going to use my education. I'm just going to serve in a civilian capacity because I am going to use that education to better the society I'm growing up in. And second of all, well, who am I serving if I stay in the military? Because I'm not serving the people who I signed up to serve. I'm not saving the lives I signed up to save. So honestly, if I ditched my degree and became an EMT, I could probably serve more people, save more people, American lives specifically. So that was a very long answer to your question, but it's something
Brilliant.
that I feel very strongly about. I feel like if we put our efforts towards, engaging young people in these trades, in these, I think it was Larry who said he joined because he wanted to learn a trade. Well, why does that have to be attached to military service? Because people in trades is what keeps our country going. So why does it have to go through the military first in order for that very real, very necessary job to be available to the American people after the fact?
You're listening to our conversation with three military service members who are all seeking conscientious objector discharges. Now, back to Joy Metzger, Juan Betancourt, and Larry Hebert. Larry, was there a level of betrayal there that you felt?
I had specifically, before October 7th, I had thought that most of what we did was for some sort of greater good. I didn't take into question the mission at all and our role in it. I definitely remember having friends talk ill about the military and what some of the things like we're doing. And I knew that my position originally at McCord, Air Force Base in Washington, I knew a lot of the missions that I was attached to were humanitarian missions. I defended the military for a large part. I thought we were truly out there just helping people. It was just a complete 180 when October 7th happened, and seeing the response from our officials and the official response from, President Joe Biden, with him constantly giving us red lines and saying this is disastrous, and then going, well, that's okay. It was deeply disheartening. And especially one of the biggest things that really set me off was the response to Aaron Bushnell's self-immolation. Because I already knew that our government clearly didn't care about civilians outside of the states, let alone the ones inside the states. Them shrugging off the Aaron Bushnell thing was just an indicator that they don't even care about the ones conducting the mission, the active duty servicemen. That was kind of like my wake-up call. They just really don't care in general, except for themselves. I definitely had to go through a lot of change to get to where I am now.
If you were to meet a high school kid standing in front of a recruiter's office, they're wondering, you can tell, they're thinking about it. What would you tell them? Juan, go ahead.
Stay away.
Stay away.
Don't sell your soul. Don't sell your body. Don't sell your conscience. Don't sell your dignity. Better ways to give back to humanity. There's better ways to give back to your country. It's a scam, and you're going to be complicit in the worst crimes ever perpetrated in human history.
Larry, what would you tell somebody, a young person?
Juan really got it right there. That's that's all you got to say. I've actually been asked, when I was in D.C., I was asked if this individual should join the military. They were considering the Navy. And I told them the military does provide you benefits, access to the GI Bill, insurance. I was able to learn a trade that I could use the stability factor. And then I've been able to travel because I moved out to Spain. But with knowing all of that, you also have to take into consideration that you might be asked to do something that is highly against your morals. And as long as it's lawful under what they consider lawful, you have to comply. If you don't, then you face repercussions. Mm-hmm. You kind of have to sacrifice your morals to join. And whether you're aware of that or not, doesn't matter to the military. They're signing you up anyways as soon as you walk in. So I think that's what I would just say is the same thing. It's just, are you willing to sacrifice your morality for serving the United States government rather than the people?
So something that I would add, and now that we're talking about, you know, giving back, it's also this idea of, I mean, look where our veterans are at in this country. Look at the veteran community. So I would even say, like, even if you're willing to compromise your humanity, your dignity, your conscience, you're still not guaranteed those benefits. I mean, the veterans, you know, homelessness crisis in this country, suicide rates. I meet so many veterans, and a lot of them have been just given the short end of the sting of the stick, and are, you know, used and abused by the VA. And so that goes to show that even for active duty members who are sent to die in these senseless wars, even if, you know, an act of self-immolation is sort of brushed underneath the rug, even veterans that did the 20 years that showed up for work, they're still being thrown under the bus. So this is just an enterprise that no one should be associated with. You're really playing yourself at the end of the day.
Thanks. We always used to make sure that people understood that veterans have roughly double the risk of suicide of non-veterans. In women, it's even greater.
So, Joy, if you're speaking to a high schooler, do you have a different take than the gentleman here?
It is a little bit different, just because, you know, some of the people I've talked to, they might agree on Palestine and they might agree on Gaza, but they might not necessarily agree with my views on deterrence and military force. I actually did have a conversation with somebody who was considering going into the military for medical school. And, you know, this person was hard set on entering the military. And honestly, at that point, you know, sometimes telling them all these things about the military, all it really does is kind of shut them off to the conversation. And I was in that same headspace when I was in high school. Someone had told me all the things that wanted, not to say that Juan and Larry said bad things, but if someone had come up to me while my mind was already set on the military, I probably would have just either blown, at the very least, I would have blown them off. At the very most, I might have felt, you know, offended at what they were trying to tell me. So I guess what I would tell a high schooler, putting aside backgrounds, putting aside why they're going in, you know, blah, 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 I would just tell them to, you know, the best thing you can do for yourself while you're entering is educate yourself. You know, you got a lot of time to figure out exactly what you're getting yourself into. You got a lot of time to figure out what your other options are. This person I was talking to, of course, you know, they're set on the military, but they were going to enlist in the army. They didn't realize that, and they're trying to go for med school, and they didn't realize things like ROTC exists. But ROTC is a program as well, and it's like, if you are that dead set on joining the military, make sure you understand within the military what opportunities there are for you, so that they don't say, all right, you're in the infantry now, go hunker down in this sand bunker over here in the Middle East while you try and do med school virtually because that's the only way we're going to let you go. Like I said, the military is a predatory force. I think that's just common sense. They'll make a lot of promises, particularly to the enlisted folk. They'll make a lot of promises about what can and can't happen. And, you know, in some cases, there's some grain of truth that can happen just normally after you've spent some years already being out in situations that you don't want to be a part of. So the best thing you can do is educate yourself. Figure out what it is you're going to be a part of. Figure out how to get to what your goal is that you want it to be. Otherwise, you find yourself in a bad situation, find yourself asking, what could I have done differently? And then all of a sudden, all of these opportunities, all these different paths you could have taken exist, but it's too late for you.
Switching gears a little bit, I'd like you all to just have a conversation among yourselves.
All the news coming out is pretty disheartening.
Yeah, I mean, we've been here now for, what, a year and 3 months? And so much has transpired. So it's disheartening to see where we are. But at the same time, it just sort of propels me. I think there's like a, I don't know, like a political will, sort of a love for the cause. And that's really what keeps me focused and motivated. I mean, it's been tough. Last 3 months have been tough, you know, just sort of, you know, struggling with anxieties, depression, but I'm sort of over that valley and sort of finding my footing again. And I'm finding that support and that love from people like Larry, people like Joy, that are just going to be dedicated and have a conscience and be a voice for this generation, regardless of the outcomes.
Yeah, I think partly one of the most difficult things to think about, like when everything is going on, is how can we effectively help? I know early on, for the first 5 or so months, it was just seeing destruction and death and just constantly every single day. And that took a massive toll on my mental. But then I just got to the point where I can't just sit here and watch this go on. Like, I need to know, like, how does this get resolved? And I think a lot of people are trying different things to make their own impact. Organizations like Code Pink and encampment outside the Israeli embassy that was protecting the Aaron Bushnell Memorial. Everyone's trying to do their own thing. When you're first getting into this sort of activism and seeing what others are doing, it's kind of hard to sort of fit yourself into that, trying to figure out how you fit into this big puzzle. But I think eventually there's going to be some sort of shift where things start aligning more for all of us.
We're in a mess right now. How do you see, as young people, getting out of the mess?
Yeah, obviously the ideal world is one where young people have empathy for others who are not of their nationality, background, race, etc. Which, you know, I've gotten called naive for that viewpoint before. And honestly, to some extent, it is a pretty idealistic stance, considering a lot of young people can't even find that kind of community with people of their own backgrounds. But I think genuinely, this is the best time to do it. A lot of violence and hatred in the past, what that's spurred by is a fear and misunderstanding of, you know, the other person. Islamophobia thrives so strongly because people have a fundamental misunderstanding of what Islam is. What they associate Islam with is the works of a few extremists. And what's interesting is that in their own spaces, they can ignore the extremists of their own groups because they understand fundamentally that extremists don't speak for the group, but they don't understand that in context with other religions or other people that they don't understand. But with the wonderful World Wide Web, we have that understanding right at our fingertips if only people do the work to go out and do the research. And a lot of people like taking the easy way out. They like watching the same news channels over and over again. My own parents are glued to Fox News, like it's, you know, the gospel or something like that. If everybody puts in a little bit more effort to just kind of understand our world and the people in it, and you know, honestly, at this point, that's also an idealistic stance too. If there's just like that understanding and that love for other people, who might not necessarily look, talk, and think like us, then already we've made leaps and bounds towards actual legitimate world peace, not just like the Christmas world peace that people think they want. And honestly, we're on that road already, I think. And you can see it in the amount of Americans who are deciding to go against what America has tried to teach us this whole time, that Israel is above contempt and above the law and above reproach, or maybe those aren't the right words, but is above criticism. Already so many Americans are breaking out of that way of thinking because they are empathizing with the people that Israel is actively oppressing, despite everything that we've been taught about, despite everything we've been taught about terrorism, about Islam, about who we should hate, who our enemies are. People are seeing past all of that, and over 60% of Americans want a ceasefire. The majority of Americans want Israel to stop killing children. And already that's leaps and bounds from the immediate post 9/11 America mentality. And I think if there's people out there who are willing to continue on with that flow of trying to understand other cultures and trying to understand other people, you know, then we'll actually get to the kind of coexistence that Israel claims that it wants. And that's when we'll actually be able to probably when we'll be able to start convincing people that violence is not the answer.
A plan that doesn't involve apocalypse. That's always a good thing. Larry, what's it going to take?
I mean, Joy hit it off and covered it, but I think that there's already something happening. I think one of the biggest reasons for that is independent media. And having social media and seeing people document the atrocities happening at ground level. Like, we don't need to hear what is happening in Gaza from Fox News. We can see it from people in Gaza. And that is great for the future. I think that is going to help us get to that understanding that Joy was talking about. And I think that's why that 60% of Americans, I think they broke it down by age groups as well. And you could see that the older generations were much more against supporting ceasefire versus the younger generations, which were 90-80% in support of it. It is because the younger generations are getting their news from like TikTok or Instagram, these independent sources and journalists. That is a good sign. But then also we have to do what we can and actually put action to it, because we can have discussions all day in our groups. We can do interviews. We could do whatever it is and talk about things. But unless we put actual action to it, things don't change. I saw early on, a lot of the individuals that I was talking to had this viewpoint that like, well, what can I do? I'm just some guy doing a job, you know, out here in New Hampshire. Like, I can't do anything and I'm not part of this. And I never really had that thought process. From the day I saw that first video, children running from a home that was bombed in Gaza, I knew I had, like, I felt inclined, like I had to do something. So I've never really felt like, oh, well, I can't do anything. I always felt like I felt displaced from it because I'm over here in Spain versus being able to organize and meet people back in the States. I think a lot of people have that mentality. And maybe it is just an American thing, but a lot of people have that mentality like, what can I do? I'm just one guy. And it all starts with organizations like Code Pink and Veterans for Peace, About Face, these organizations where anybody can show up really and help out in some way. And we need more people to contribute to things like that. And then obviously, our government, anybody can really run for office, obviously with certain stipulations, but
like $1 million.
Yeah. My entire life growing up, people have told me that politicians are snakes and they're liars, yada, 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 but nobody does anything about it. I think if people actually put in the work to try to get into these positions and sacrificed some things in their life, whether it's a promotion or whatever it is, to run for office with good intention and try to correct the problems that are in DC, I think we could see a dramatic impact through that.
That'd be great. Juan, what's it going to take to get us?
Jim, I wish I had a crystal ball. And I think as Foucault said, like, you can't predict a revolution, although one would hope a moral one, and one that, you know, fascism is here. This is a dying empire, and empires always go down kicking and violently. So, and we're going to be seeing the colonial boomerang effect, and the policies that are going to be enacted in the global South, we're going to be seeing that in the streets of America. But I think that dynamic is going to create a consciousness in which Americans, workers, the multicultural background, are going to have an awakening, is that those wars, those imperialist wars that this country has fought for the last, you know, 75 years, are tied to their material conditions here. And so I think that's going to propel people to organize, to unionize, to run for office, to, you know, try to look for ways in which they can help their most immediate communities. Because, yeah, the forces of fascism are here, and we need to be ready. And this is the moment to organize and to be prepared for what that's going to look like, and hopefully able to avoid that apocalypse through mass movements and through organizations that range from trade unions to anti-war movements. We need large coalitions in order to avoid further war and avoid further oppression.
Are you all planning to stick with Veterans for Peace?
Absolutely.
Okay. Very good. Very
good. A loaded question.
You know, that's right. All right. Are your dues paid up? Never mind. Well, is there anything that each of you wanted to say that you didn't get a chance to say that you want to really put out to the public? Larry?
I think we covered quite a bit. Well, so myself, Juan, and Joy, we organized a group called Service Members for Ceasefire, and we started a page on Instagram. And so we are obviously looking to do all sorts of things like educate, organize, and help out other service members. Be that face for that demographic that has been mostly silent, along with individuals like, you know, Harrison Mann and Riley Livermore, and, you know, many of the people that got out because of Gaza, because of October 7th, or the effects after October 7th. And got out and are now veterans that, you know, have swarmed Veterans for Peace and About Face, and are looking to organize now for the cause. And so we've already helped out a few service members, and we're in talks with lots of others. And I think that's going to be kind of like the focus for us. And this group will be really solid for anyone who's trying to get out and may not know like what the next step is for them and how they can help.
When service members are looking for this, what are they going to search on?
Service Members for Ceasefire.
Service Members for Ceasefire. Okay, right. Excellent, mm-hmm. Excellent. What, Juan, is there anything that you wanted to say that you didn't get a chance to say?
I say continue to support anti-war organizations. Continue to write to your politicians, show up to protests, join co-ops, mutual aids, educate yourself, and just try to be an ally and a voice and a partner for the oppressed people in the world. In this moment, particularly Palestinian resistance and Palestinian self-determination.
Okay, very good. Joy?
I want to say specifically to service members that you are not as limited in your ability to speak out as you think you are. I know Juan and Larry kind of have some scary stories about leadership being terrible to them. But honestly, like, you might get a little bit of a comment like, hey, careful what you say. But at the end of the day, your right to speech is federally protected by law. In essence, don't go supporting extremist organizations. And of course, you know, with the new year rolling in, what the exact definition of it that is might change. But at the very least, for now, absolutely go join protests out of uniform if you don't want to get in trouble. You are allowed to follow whatever social media accounts you want to follow if you just want to stay informed and kind of keep that information in the back of your head. You are allowed to pick up a book and open it and read and figure out what's actually going on. You are allowed to do that. You are allowed to read anti-war military veterans. A good one is Smedley Butler, who said you might as well go and fight underneath the oil corporation's flag. They should have their own flag, I think is what he said, or something like that. You know, his opinion might not be one that everyone agrees with, but it is a running joke that the military invades places for oil. I'm saying it very tongue-in-cheek, but that's one of the biggest things that frustrates me, is that people will try and speak on this and they can't, they haven't even opened an article on Wikipedia to, you know, kind of get the context of what's going on. And that is something that is your right to do as a service member. You are allowed, you are encouraged to understand exactly what it is that you're doing. And, you know, even if you don't go and do the interview with Democracy Now, even if you're deciding you don't want to pay dues to Veterans for Peace, which as an active duty member or as a currently serving member, you actually don't have to pay dues. So you don't have any of my money yet right now. But, and once you're a veteran, you have to pay dues. But as an active service member, you don't have to pay dues to join Veterans for Peace. And your leadership can't stop you from joining an organization like Veterans for Peace. That is something that you're explicitly allowed to do. You just can't organize yourself. You can't lead these organizations while you're currently serving. Really, you know, dive into the instructionals. Even if you are, you know, like Larry, even if you want to start breaking some rules, my number one philosophy for that is that if you're going to break rules, you should at least know what the rules are that you're breaking. So at least you're not surprised. But, you know, you 100% are allowed to use your voice. You are allowed to write to politicians as long as you're not threatening to kill them. You are allowed to write to them and tell them that you're a service member and you don't like what they are supporting. You're allowed to talk to your fellow service members about what's going on. You should absolutely 100% understand what your role is in geopolitics. You cannot be an enforcement arm in foreign affairs if you don't understand foreign affairs. I'll hop off my soapbox.
Excellent. And now that we're talking about rights and protected speech, Veterans for Peace has appealed for redress to the second appeal, which, you know, provides service members, active duty and guardsmen, with five templates in which you can pick from, and you can directly write to your politicians in protest of what's going on in Gaza and demand a ceasefire, and most importantly, demand our arms embargo on the state of Israel, which is violating international law. So these are protected channels that are, you know, sort of sanctified by the Constitution. This is something that you can do as a private citizen. So, yeah, like Joy said, it's like understanding that you're not muffled and you can break through the cynicism and you can break sort of this sort of defeatism, which I've been kind of encountering recently. So people are just sort of accepting a war with China, a nuclear war as a given. And it's like, well, you still have a room to leverage here. You still have a voice. And sort of like Joy said, lean on that instinct and lean on the rights that are already up there, that are, you already have at your disposal.
And so this was actually hopeful and encouraging, and it's nice to have younger people on the show. And so now the big question between the three of you. We always end with a song. And so when I asked that question, they all came up with great songs. And so we only have time for a portion of the songs. Here they are introducing the songs to finish up the show.
I would recommend this song. It's called Solo Le Pido a Dios. I ask God only one thing. It's by this wonderful Argentinian folk singer called Mercedes Sosa. So it's a Spanish song, but the song talks about her asking God to, you know, give her strength and to, you know, give her courage to not look away from war, not look away from injustices. So it's a song that I, you know, find myself returning to quite often. Solo le pido a Dios.
Muerte no me encuentre vacía y sola.
song that I fell in love with since going to DC and being around other Palestinians was Dami Falastini.
Why? Because my blood is Palestinian. Oh, you secular world and the few capitalists. This world was not your oyster and never will be. For every dirty crime and all atrocities, there will be consequences and justice shall be. For every dirty crime and all atrocities, there will be consequences and justice shall be. And justice shall be. I promise this on my blood, on my veins, on my blood, on my veins, and on this very life that's given to me. Cause my blood is Palestinian, Palestinian, Palestinian. On my promise, on my faith, on my promise, on my faith, on my land, on my land, on my land, you will find me, you will find me. Why? Cause my blood is Palestinian. I stand by my people in every hardship, in every tribulation, in every weather. I stand by my people in every hardship, in every tribulation, in every weather. On this journey of freedom, with patience, I stand with every Ghazi and every martyr. I stand with every Ghazi and every martyr. Cause my blood is Palestinian, Palestinian, Palestinian.
And Joy, do you have a song also?
One of the songs that I have been listening to is Anten by Bashar Murad. It's another.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in a